one of the things we need to understand is a question of why is it that people sin? Why is it that we find, like in Romans chapter 3, which is our first verse that we're going to look at, Romans chapter 3 and in verse 23. Romans chapter 3 and in verse 23 it says, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." How is it that everyone sins? That's a question that a lot of people have tried to address. There is a document, for instance, among the denominations. Many people in the denominations have settled on this idea, and it comes actually from Augustine, comes way back from early years, about 300, 400 AD, that the reason why everyone sins is because we are born sinful. That is built into us. Probably one of the more famous documents that says this is a document that's called the Westminster Confession. It holds a popular view. It says, "Our first parents, being seduced by the subtlety and temptations of Satan, sinned in eating the forbidden fruit." Not too bad right there. "This, their sin, God was pleased, according to his wise and holy counsel, to permit, having purpose to order it to his own glory." Now, did you see what he just said? He said God liked it that man sinned. Then goes on. "But this sin they fell into from their original righteousness and communion with God, and so became dead in sin and wholly defiled in all the facilities and parts of soul and body. They being the root of mankind, the guilt of this sin was imputed. And the same death in sin and corrupted nature conveyed to all their prosperity, descending from them by the original generation. This original corruption, whereby we are utterly indisposed, disabled, and made opposite to all good, and wholly inclined to all evil, do precede all actual transgressions." Basically saying, because Adam and Eve sinned, it was passed down generation after generation. Didn't say exactly how, but goes through all prosperity. And we are totally evil from the beginning. Before we ever sin, we're already sinful. "This corruption of nature, being this life, doth remain in those who are regenerated. And although it be through Christ pardoned and mortified, yet both itself and all the motivations thereof are truly and properly sin." Even though you're saved, you're still a sinner. You still have that sinful nature. Basically says that Adam and Eve's original sin altered themselves and their descendants, not just spiritually, but basically also physically. So that people have a pre-built-in propensity to sin. That's how they solve this problem. How is it that everyone sins? Because you're born with an inclination to sin. That's just the way you're made. Even when saved by Christ, this inclination to sin remains while we're still in the physical flesh, is basically what it's saying. That is a very common view. While they may not word it the way the Westminster Confession does, this is a very, very common held view. So pervasive that one of the most popular translations of the Bible that we have in the English, the New International Version, alters many of the occurrences of the word called flesh, which we're going to get into later, and puts in its place sinful nature. Okay? But is that a good translation? Is that actually what the Bible says? Does it really reflect what God has taught? So let's look at it. What is our nature? Well, the proof text that's usually used is Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. And it's verse 3. Ephesians 2, verse 3. "Among them, we too all formerly lived in the lust of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest." And they say, look, see, by nature we are children of wrath. Well, the word that's being used there, phusis, is the word. And we derive our word for physics and physical from that word. It's talking about things that pertain to the physical world, the form or the nature of the thing, as to how it behaves as it does. So in other words, we're talking about things like instinctive behavior. Because just because something is, it is the way it behaves. That type of definition we can find in the Bible for this particular word. If we take a look at Romans chapter 11. Romans chapter 11. And in verse 21. Romans 11 verse 21. "For if God did not spare the natural branches, he will not spare you either." That word nature there, the natural branches, it means the branches that would normally grow out of a tree. You don't have to teach a tree how to grow a branch. It does so naturally. And that's the word that's there. In Galatians chapter 2 and in verse 15. Galatians chapter 2, verse 15. "We are Jews by nature and not sinners among the Gentiles." When he says we are Jews by nature, he's saying we're born Jews. Well, that's how you became an Israelite. You got born to Israelite parents, and by nature, you're Israelites. You're born in the United States, you become Americans. You're born over in Germany, you become Germans. It's by nature that that happens. In Galatians chapter 4 and verse 8. "However, at that time, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those which by nature are no gods." A piece of stone or something carved out of wood by nature is not a god. It just isn't a god. It's a stone or it's a piece of wood. It cannot rule the universe. It doesn't have the nature to do so. In Romans chapter 1, and in verse 26, we have one in the negative sense. Romans chapter 1 and verse 26 says, "For this reason God gave them over to degrading passions, for the woman exchanged a natural function for that which is unnatural." Men and women are supposed to have sex together. That's the natural way. That's the way God made us. Anything beyond that then becomes unnatural. It's not the way the body functions. But what the Westminster Confession says is that we are utterly indisposed, disabled, and made opposite to all good, and wholly inclined to all evil. Now, is that the way God made us? Does that make sense? That is our nature, that nothing that we can do, we can never, ever do anything good. You take a child, leave it on its own, it will never, ever do anything good. That's what it's the statement is claiming. To consider that, I want you to go over to Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2 and verse 14. Paul says, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively, or by nature, the things of the law, these not having the law are a law to themselves." Oh, did you notice what it said? when the Gentiles without a law instinctively or by nature do the things of the law. In other words, they're doing what's right. How? By nature. Well, then that doesn't mean then we're born so that we cannot do good. And that verse continues on, in that they show the works of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and their thoughts alternatively excusing or else defending them. So people can do good, and people have done good. And God has said so. So you cannot by nature be unable to do anything right and do right at the same time. Those two ideas will conflict. But that's because there's another definition of phusis that most people skip over. I have a really good encyclopedic set of dictionaries downstairs, and it completely ignores this definition. But then the people who wrote it are very strongly believers in this particular belief. But there is another definition for phusis. Since phusis can also be that which a person does by ingrained habit, or his character, or his temperament. Kittle's dictionary says, phusis is then used for a man's character or nature without reference to his birth or descent, insofar as this is given and not dependent on conscious direction or education. Most of us, when you have kids, you understand. Some of your kids, by nature, are just easygoing. You get some kids that, by nature, are wound up worse than a clock. Okay? You didn't teach them that. That's just the way they are. Okay? That's another way of using phusis. It's part of their character. It's part of their temperament. Okay? Both in that passage in Romans 2:14, where it says the Gentiles will either do right or wrong based on their nature, and I would argue in Ephesians 2 verse 3 are examples of that definition. In fact, let's go back to Ephesians 2 verse 3 just for a moment again. And I want you to notice some things. Ephesians chapter 2 again, and in verse 3, among them we too all formerly lived in the lust of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. How is it that we became children of wrath? What is it that Paul says caused it? Does he say it because you were born that way? Or isn't it what he's saying, that the reason why we're objects of God's wrath is because we too lived after the flesh? And we're disobedient. And what Paul is saying, that because of the way we lived, not because of the way we were born, that we naturally were objects of God's wrath. Of course sinners face God's wrath. That is a natural consequence of sin. It is the nature of sin to be a subject to God's anger at sin. In fact, over in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 29, right at the end of the chapter. Behold, I have found only this, that God made men upright, but they sought out many schemes. How are we born? How did God make us? God made us upright. God made us righteous. But we sought out sin. That's the point that's made in Romans 3, verse 23. We have all sinned. We all took action to sin. We all became sinners. Romans 3:23 does not say we were born sinners. It actually says we became sinners. Because sin is the breaking of God's law. In 1 John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3, and in verse 4, everyone who practices sin also practices lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. How do you become a sinner? You break laws. Being born doesn't break a law. In fact, it is part of the natural laws. That when you have a conception, there is going to be a baby born. That's the way things work. That doesn't break a law. So if sin were natural, think about it. Let's go back to Romans chapter 1, verse 26 again. If sin were natural, how could homosexuality be against nature? If sin was natural, if that was the normal state of people. Again, look at Romans chapter 1, verse 26. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for the women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural, and in the same way the men abandoned the natural function of the woman, and burning their desire for one another, men with men committing indecent acts, and receiving in their persons the due penalty of their error. It is wrong. It is unnatural. But the claim is that sin is natural. That can't be true. Can't have both at the same time. And again, if sin were natural, then how could the Gentiles by nature do what was right? And so what we get to is a Greek word that is being translated. It's a Greek word, sarx. It primarily refers to the physical flesh. So that stuff that's on my bones right here, that's sarx. Okay? By extension, then it refers to things that derive from the desires of that flesh, from the physical body. So then, for instance, in 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, and in verse 15, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever. Where do lusts come from? They come from the fact that we live in this physical world. The lusts come from that world. But the reason why people want to say sinful nature when they see the word flesh, and that's what the New International does. If you have a New International version and see the look at it, I got one quote from it. But a lot of places where it says flesh, they take out flesh and they put in this the word sinful nature to say that it is a normal, natural, sinful state. And they get this mostly from Romans chapter 7, verse 13, or 18. Romans 7, verse 18. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is in my flesh. For the willing is present in me, but the doing of good is not. Now if you think about it, that sounds very similar to what the Westminster Confession said. Nothing good in the flesh. But there's a subtle assumption that's being made. If nothing good is found in the flesh, then the flesh must be evil. And if you look at it, it really doesn't say that. We have this tendency, if it's not A, then it must be the opposite of A. He just said that there's no good there. And here's what I think he's actually talking about. See, if sin, but before getting there, let's see this. If sin is built into the flesh, if it's built into us such that we are always sinful, then we have a problem, and that extends into this all new branch of trying to figure out, you know, one problem, we're going to solve it, leads us to another problem. How do we solve that one? If we claim it's built into us as natural, then how do we explain Christ? Because in Hebrews chapter 2 and in verse 14, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14, therefore, since the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise also partook of the same, that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is the devil. Christ partook in the flesh. He was made like us. In verse 17 of the same chapter, Hebrews 2, verse 17, therefore he had to be made like his brethren in all things, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make a propitiation for the sins of the people. Christ had to be made like us. He had flesh and blood just like us. But in Hebrews 4, verse 15, it says, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things, as yet we are, yet without sin. Christ did not sin. Well, wait a minute, it's supposed to be built into us. We have no choice. And so that lends up leading to a whole bunch of, how do we explain Christ? That's where the Catholics try to get around it by saying, well, Mary was specially made so that she had no sin, so that Christ would have no sin, couldn't inherit it from her. Of course, then the problem is, well, how did Mary get it? Well, it took a miracle. Well, why couldn't you just do a miracle on Christ? The Protestants go in a different direction. They basically say, oh, it's only inherited through the fathers. Your dads are all responsible. Because Jesus' father was God the Father, so therefore they avoid that question. But Christ was made just like us. He had flesh and blood like us. He was tempted like us. And yet he did so without sin. So the answer is sin is not naturally in the flesh. Now we already point out God made people upright back in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 29. I want you to notice some other passages along with that. Take a look at Romans 7. Romans 7, starting with verse 9. It says, I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin became alive and I died. And this commandment, which was to result in life, provided to result in death for me. For sin, taking opportunity through the commandment, deceived me and through it killed me. There's something being stated here. Paul stating, I was once alive until I became underneath the commandments. But what's being claimed is you were dead before you even started. You can't be alive and then die. You have to be already dead and somehow then become alive. In other words, one starts out life alive, and then through the commandments we can become aware of sin, and we die. Another verse along with that is back in Deuteronomy. Probably my favorite one to use in proving this. When the children of Israel rebelled against God and decided they weren't going to go into the land of Canaan, and God said, okay, you're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years as punishment for that. He said, you will wander there until that generation dies out. But notice what he says about the children. In Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 39, "Moreover, your little ones, who you said would become prey, and your sons, who this day have no knowledge of good or evil, shall enter there. And I'll give it to them, and they shall possess it." Children have no knowledge of good and evil. God's not holding them responsible. They have no sin because they don't know the difference between right and wrong. They're not held responsible. We are not made sinful, as children were not sinful. Thus, by nature, we're not sinful people. We become sinful people because of our choices. So where does sin come from again? Well, we already said the flesh has desires. We have instinctive responses. You don't have to teach a baby how to nurse. It comes born knowing how to nurse from the mother. Children learn real quickly, basically on their own, how to eat. And while we encourage our kids to walk, they basically learn how to walk themselves. We have all sorts of things in us that work by instinct. Take a look in James chapter 1 and in verse 14. James chapter 1 and in verse 14. "But each one is tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust," or his own desires. "Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death." What Satan does is take in those built-in desires, our instinctive responses, and put us in situations where our instinct would lead us to do something that's wrong. If we didn't stop to think about it, we would by impulse do what was wrong. So when Paul said there's nothing good in his flesh, what he's saying is the natural instincts that are built into you are absolutely incapable of making moral choices. You cannot listen to your body and decide what is right or wrong. There is no moral choice in your body. There's instinctive responses. Our physical bodies do not look at a situation and say, "Yeah, I know I'm hungry, but I shouldn't eat right now." Our physical bodies look at it and say, "I'm hungry." It's our minds that look at the situation and say, "Yeah, but I can't steal somebody's food just because I'm hungry. That's not right." It's our mind that knows the difference between right and wrong. So in our bodies, there is nothing good. It isn't able to make correct decisions. That's where he talks about his will, "but my will." Our minds are different. Our minds can judge between what we desire to do and what is right to do. Going back to Romans 7, and in verse 15. Romans 7, verse 15. "For what I am doing, I do not understand. For I'm not practicing what I would like to do. But I'm doing the very thing I hate. But if I do the very thing that I do not want to do, I agree with the law, confessing that the law is good." What's Paul saying? In my mind, I look at it and say, "This is the right thing I ought to do." My body keeps pushing me in the wrong direction because his desires don't think about moral choices. So it wants to go and just do whatever it wants to do. There's a loaf of bread. I'm hungry. My body starts salivating and my stomach goes grumble, grumble, and it wants me to take the piece of bread. Or in Steve's case, the marshmallow. But our mind says, hey, I need to do something else. I know what is right. And therein lies a conflict. And the question then is, where do we focus? Do we focus on what my body says I want? That has no ability to make a good moral choice? Which will lead to sin as often as not? Or maybe more often? Or do I focus with my mind on what God tells me is right? That's the point that's made in Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, starting with verse 5. For those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the thing of the flesh. But those who according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh is death. But the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it does not make itself subject to the law of God, for it is not even able to do so. And those who are in the flesh cannot please God. It's that simple. If I make my body run my life, and that's where I put my mind to it, to say, whatever I want, I get. I am unable to please God because God is not even thought of in the equation. I don't think about the laws of God. I only think about what I want. And it has no moral choice. But the mindset on the Spirit, that's the moral choice is prevalent. Right and wrong then become dominant. And then I start focusing on doing what is right. In other words, it's the same thing as you find in Joshua 24. Hold your fingers at Romans 8. We're going to go right back to it. But in Joshua 24, and in verse 14, Joshua tells the children of Israel after they conquered the land of Canaan, he basically stands up to them and says, you're not able to follow God. Don't even bother trying. And all the people kept saying, no, we can do it, we can do it. And in Joshua 24, he says, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve. Whether the gods your fathers served which were beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in the lands you're living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. If you want to serve the Lord, get rid of those gods. You choose. You're not going to get rid of the gods. You pick which gods you want to follow. But I'm going to follow God. I'm going to follow the Lord. But I want you to see the flaw that's in the New International Version. Remember, go back to Romans 8. Here's the New International Version. Same verse. The mind of sinful man. That's the word flesh there. Notice they already made up they already decided it's sin is involved. There's no word sin there. It's flesh. The mind of sinful men is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. The sinful mind is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those controlled by the sinful nature cannot please God. Here's the problem. There's a word called phromomia, which is the ones that's highlighted in blue, controlled. Now, if you ever noticed when I read in the New American Standard, it didn't have the word controlled there. It said the mind set. Because phromomia is one's inclination or one's purpose. But when you're controlled, it's somebody else's inclination, somebody else's purpose. They reversed it to what is actually said. See, the New International changes what is an individual's choice to what is externally forced. See, none of us start out life sinful. None of us can claim, though, that God made us sin. Going back to James chapter 1, we had read verse 14 and 15, but now let's go back to verse 13. James chapter 1, and in verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. When a person claims that they are being made by God, by nature, to sin, who are they blaming? They're blaming God. That's the way God made me. It cannot be. No one is forced to sin. In fact, the passage we had this morning, again, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and in verse 13, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you, but such is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape so that you may be able to endure it. God limits what Satan can do so that our choices always remain. Satan cannot box us in so that we have to sin. I spent this afternoon writing an answer to somebody who just said, I don't know what came over me. I just had to do it. No. No one has to sin. God makes sure of it. Why do we sin, though? Why is it so prevalent? Because for many people, it's simply not thinking. You just let the impulses go. You do whatever your body desires. And you don't think about whether it's right or wrong. And so, of course, you're going to end up doing things that are wrong. You let your instincts run your life, and you're going to follow those instincts right into sin. But for some other people, we know it's wrong, but we drop our guard. And then our instincts take over. And that's when you get those cases, well, I didn't mean to do it. No, you probably didn't mean to do it. But you let your guard down. You let the body run, which your mind knew wasn't right. The point that Paul has made in Romans chapter 3 is that all of us, somewhere along the line, sin. What a lot of people misread that passage is saying we're constantly always sinful. It doesn't say that. It just charges the fact that we all sin. We are bombarded so often, so many times, that somewhere along the line, we all give in. Most of us give in repeatedly, multiple times, to excess. But we all sin. But there is a way out. In 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, and in verse 1, my little children, I'm writing these things to you so that you may not sin. And if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. The goal is don't sin. And if we do, we have a way to have that repaired. It's through Jesus Christ, the one who lived without sin. Jesus is our way to repair our relationship with God. If you're not a Christian, Jesus invites you to become sinless, to put away the man of sin. In Romans chapter 6, verse 3, or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into his death? Therefore we have been buried with him through baptism into death, so that as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too walk in newness of life. For if we become united with him in the likeness of his death, certainly we will also be in the likeness of his resurrection. Knowing this, our old self was crucified with him, in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we no longer be slaves to sin. For he who has died is freed from sin. Does it mean we're never ever going to sin again? No. Sin's still there. Temptation's still there. We still have lapses. We drop our guard. We claim we're without sin. We're fooling ourselves. That's what 1 John says. It's not saying that we're constantly in sin. Whole goal is not to sin. But there's a way out of sin. And when we do slip, we let our guards down, and we start doing the things that we ought not to do, we have an advocate with Jesus. We go to God in confession, pray, and God is faithful to forgive us of all unrighteousness. So if you are not a child of God, there is a way out of your sin, to start down a path living without it. And if you are a child of God and may have slipped and want the prayers of your brethren on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of the selected.